One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, Scott Telford. You know
hell yeah! It's a Friday. It's the UBP. It's the UBP. I have changed the UBP air horn. It's the as far as I can drop in. But I am Scott Telford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
It's the Entitled Banter podcast, where we round up all sorts of different questions, talking points, whatever's going on in the gaming industry. And it seems like a whole bunch of stuff is going on again. It's like Far Cry's back, Metroid Dread is out, the Nintendo Switch OLED is out, there's a Battlefield 2042 beta. There's a lot of stuff going on.
It feels like that moment when Han Solo is like coming out of the cryo freeze, and he's like, I can't see, I can't do anything.
He's alive. Weary.
The gaming industry is alive, ladies and gentlemen. Can't see at all, but they are alive.
No, everything is very much blurry right now, but I think things will slowly come into view. Because, I mean, we'll get to all these different talking points, because you've been living with the Switch for a week or so, a couple of weeks-ish.
Baby, right. Should we let people understand this? Because they might be tuning in thinking, what the hell's going on?
Yes.
So I have finally joined the Nintendo Switch party.
The gang.
We reviewed the OLED system and Metroid Dread, and Scott, out of the kindness of his heart, said, you don't have a Switch. Do you want the opportunity to review this? And I was like, yes, please, Daddy. And then gave this little nugget of treasure, and I turned it on, and I was like,
it's all the things
that I made was like a chimpanzee was being thrown into a blender, mate. I was excited.
Well, you've got like 4 years worth of stuff to catch up on. Like, we'll get to this because we had a lot of questions about Nintendo stuff.
Sure.
So we'll do these things in I've mixed up the order of stuff that the questions come in as usual, but we'll get to different things. So yes, first question from Jacob Wright, who just says, Legends of the Podcast, thoughts on the latest Resident Evil film trailer? Well, thank you very much for the Legends comment, but I'll tell you what's not legendary is the new Resident Evil film trailer. What's your thoughts? Because we've not talked about this yet, but I know you've seen the trailer.
So this is the thing. Scott said about 10 minutes before this podcast, take a wee gander.
Have you seen it?
Get your peepers peeped on that. And I was like, okay, Resident Evil, new film. I thought that it was a straight to Netflix TV series. I thought that it was that.
It feels like it.
But no, it is Welcome to Raccoon City, a brand new film that intends to be an origin story, yet starts with events from Resident Evil 2. What the chuff are you on about? Taking the absolute piss?
It's just the production value on it. Like, everyone got a bit up in arms about the casting. I don't really care about the casting ever. I'm just, if you do it well, it's fine.
Yeah,
but like, my thing is the budget, the production value. Like, there's a few CG shots in this that look like they were made, you know, for a £10 crisp note. There's not much going on.
I'm not gonna lie, I thought that the FMVs were ripped straight from the GameCube Resident Evil 1 remake. I was like, oh, whoa, that's a very looking liquor.
Yeah, well, you get to see a liquor at the end, and they end on like a liquor's face or whatever. But there's one bit where they show like a giant thing with like a mouth, and its mouth is like below its head.
That's gonna be one of Birkin's mutations.
Right. It looks like Flowey from the end of Undertale too. It just looks like this giant sort of over mutated thing that just looks really angular and weird. But yeah, I don't know.
Hit the nail on the head, mate. Over mutated is definitely what this film is going to be, because I do not understand why, in an origin story of all things, that they would decide to take events from two games which have more than enough content to fill out a movie a piece each, and then say, hey, actually, the things that we are going to be rewriting to tie in all of these events together is that we're going to make Claire know more about Umbrella than Chris does. Chris literally spent all of his life researching Umbrella before and knew that there was shady dealings going on, and you're telling me that she has to convince Chris that Umbrella are the bad guys.
Okay.
That is blowing my egg brain.
See, you Benroy have a much more, like, you guys know the lore way better than I do. I didn't even notice that stuff. My thing is more that, like I said, the production looks a bit naff. And I also tonally, like, I liked the original, the Alice movies. Let's call them the Alice Resident Evils. Yeah, like, they were dumb.
Only because of Colin Salmon.
But Colin Salmon, the legend that is. But I mean, like, that whole run of movies were terrible. But every single time a new one came out, me and my friends would go watch it. And we would just, like, have fun at how stupid and schlocky and dumb and self-aware all those movies were. And so that was a hell of a ride. And I thought their whole mandate with the new one was that they were going to do, like, a more gritty style thing. And it's not that this I want Resident Evil to be grounded at all. But I still... Because that's the thing. That's the curious or the big question or the big talking point is this thing looks campy as hell, which Resident Evil is campy as hell. Okay, you can do that again. But why bother doing this reboot, this whole origin thing, this whole potential new casting and everything else if you're just going to do another throwaway camp fest? Like, it's, we can do that, but we have done that. So I kind of wonder why.
The only grittiness in this entire project is the visual fidelity of those CGI graphics, mate. They look absolutely ropey. Tarzan could swing on them. They're that bad. Like, I personally am all up for the sort of, like, over the top and silliness and the B movie schlock, like,
yes,
you're saying, Resident Evil thing.
Punch some boulders, mate.
Like, as much as people will say that, like, I mean, I've made it very clear, I don't like the Resident Evil Alice movies that much, but I do enjoy the first one because at least it was like, cool, we're going to tell when we use the word origin story, we are literally going to reboot it, remake it in our own image. That's fine because it stands alone as separate and you can judge it on its own merits. Here, they're trying to ape too many elements of the games that all you're doing is drawing comparisons to them and saying, no, that's not where it should be or how it should be.
Another thing as well is the amount of fan service that's in here. I have a weird thing where if you're deliberately going, look how much we've done from the games, like, that can't mask that lack of quality. Like, just because you've written itchy tasty on a wall doesn't mean that you get a free pass for everything else. Like, that was the solo Star Wars solo approach where it's, oh, we're referencing the Jedi Masters of Terras Cassi. Remember that? Like,
you can't hate us if we're constantly telling you how good we were. That's the mentality that they approach it with, but that doesn't work.
So, I did the homework, and I'm like, yeah, you can Google those things. Like, it's not that's not enough. So I don't know, I'm curious about it, I guess, but I don't see the point of it. I thought it was going to be something different, and it's not that I want a gritty Resident Evil. I think Resident Evil is just big dumb fun, and it's kind of ridiculous, and you can do Resident Evil 8 was so, like, multifaceted. Like, you had the wolf stuff, you had the Silent Hill style level, you had, like, Lily Dimitrescu, and, like, but you still had the big monsters and stuff.
It played into the sort of, like, the overall campiness of what it is.
Very anime these days.
When you're, like, looking at it, when you're looking at a giant werewolf, it, like, horror treads the line between being genuinely horrific and comedy so finely that you have to embrace that some people are going to laugh at your monster. They are just going to go, like, I'm sorry, but that's just ridiculous to me. Whereas other people are terrified by it. So the balance between saying, hey, look, we are ridiculous at the same time, that can work. But here,
it's just like,
I don't know, they're playing it straight and it's not.
Yeah, and, like, Resident Evil in general, like, I mean, Resident Evil 7, I would say, was way more grounded. It was just this kind of Texas Chainsaw style thing. But then at the end, when Baker mutates, it becomes, like, Resident Evil 6 again. And it's this big, dumb oil monster that you're killing and stuff. And then 8 is so crazy and over the top. I think Resident Evil has so many different strands to its personality that, like, either go down that route and that's cool, but then I'm kind of like, why don't you just continue what we had? I don't know. I just thought the overall production quality, the tone, none of that stuff landed for me.
There was one thing that I did like from it, though, and that is that, do you remember in the Resident Evil 2 remake, they introduced those enemies, or was it the 3 remake, where they were, like, covered in white, and they were like just white zombies that couldn't die and kept...
I
can't remember the name of them now, that's just escaped me, but they seem to have introduced that enemy into this film, because it had the scientist who had the... I'm not going to make fun of him, but he had prominent dental work. That's what they were focusing on in the shot. And he had the same teeth structure when you could tell that that was the mutated thing that pinned down later on. And I think that they're meant to be that zombie thing which keeps getting back up again.
Oh, like, possibly. So the thing is...
That will be what it is. That'll be all right.
Yeah, I've seen Benroy point out, I'm sure Lisa Trevor is also in this. It's the girl. She looks like she's wearing a zombie onesie. Like, she does. It doesn't look like it's part of a mutated face. It just looks like her face is inside like a zipped up thing.
They have, her thing is that they tried to stitch her back up again and again and again. So I think that they're trying to go for like a leather face thing where maybe she's like taking the faces of her victims to try and look.
Okay, cool. That's a bit better.
I think that might be what they're going
for. I think for me, it's going to be the production quality and just the way that it's shot. It looks quite cheap. But at the same time, is a way for that to just be fun, like big dumb fun. You can do whatever you want, and the Resident Evil fandom will enjoy that. But
I think that my closing point on it is that they're trying to do way too much, and I feel like they're going to underdeliver across the board, because when you look at the things they have to work with, you're hitting so many boxes, having like the William Birkin thing, having like this regenerating zombie, having the Cerberus dogs, having like there's Wesker in there, there was this guy, like there's all these people, all these characters, all these elements coming in, that you feel like that it's just too much, because what we didn't see any hunters. They are pretty much like very, very much tied to the series. Didn't see Nemesis, but I bet you anything that they will shoehorn him or Mr. X in.
He'll be a post-credits thing.
Yeah, it'll be like a boom, boom, knock through the wall, and she'll be like, oh, cut.
They'll absolutely do a post-credits thing for that, I think. But yeah, I think it's just weird leaning on fan service that much. And also, when it's beat for beat what we've got in the games, oh, look, it's the zombie turn from the first game. For me personally, that stuff doesn't track with me, where I just kind of go, okay, but what else have you actually brought to the table other than just mining my love for a thing that's already there? So I'm curious. I guess I'm optimistic. I hope it lands that weird tone it's kind of half going for, but the trailer itself looked very cheap. Next question from StarkHunter49, who says, I've listened to the show every week since it started, so hopefully you won't hate me for this, but what's the big deal with Nintendo? I've tried and tried with them, and I just can't get into any of their properties except Breath of the Wild, although I was only born in 1998. So I think...
You know what, mate? There's no shame in being born in 1998. Big up to all other people listening who were born in 1998.
The year of Metal Gear Solid, mate. It's a very good year to arrive on this earth. But I mean, that's the thing. Nintendo overall, I definitely grew up as a Sega kid, and then I went into... But I also had a Game Boy, so that was kind of like... I never had a Nintendo home console until the Switch, actually. I was always at a friend's house for GameCubes and stuff like that. So I get the... what some people refer to as the Nintendo tilt. It's like, oh, Nintendo have done something, therefore it's the best thing ever. And I think that sometimes it can be like obvious when you go into something and go, okay, what's really so good about Kirby? Or what's really so good about Mario? Oh my God, isn't it just a 3D platformer? And I think, what's your general thought on this before I end up doing a big old thing about why Nintendo are the best?
I think that Nintendo have managed to craft this amazing niche within the market of being like infallible, yet making some very dodgy mistakes in the past. Like,
oh, business-wise, yeah, totally.
Because of the fact that they've generated this image of their company being, as much as Sony tried to champion that thing of for the players, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to say that their players are their family. You grew up with Nintendo, you know, and therefore love Nintendo. And because of the fact that they're going to put out one or two games every single 6 months or something for a first party thing and always keep those exclusive to that title, they generate that sort of rabid fan base that fight tooth and nail to say that they're the best. They've always generated, ever since moving out of the 16 and 32-bit era, with the GameCube, they became the underdog. And they used that as much as they could, spun into it, lent into it as much as they could, so that loving Nintendo was like loving that band who hasn't yet fully broken into the mainstream.
Weirdly,
captivated all of your like mates' attentions. So it's like they're always on the cusp of just being like, we are mainstream, even though they're making billions and billions.
That's the thing, they are like, I think for me, like it's everything. I think the business side of them is fascinating. They do make really stupid mistakes all the time. They overcharge for everything because they are able to do that through their sheer reputation.
But Wii Music takes the title. That Wii Music.
But it's just, I think for me, it's like they're off on their own little island in regards to business decisions. And I think that does make them constantly interesting or innovative. But also their history, like they are so responsible for the fundamentals of the gaming industry. Like you literally wouldn't have the industry today if not for the way that they handle themselves.
And that's what they trade on. It's the fact that they go like, look, we saved gaming. We brought gaming into your homes.
We made it work in the West.
You should always respect us. That's the mentality. And they'll never come out and say that because that would ruin them, break the illusion. But that is the image they generate.
You want to talk about like where it got to a certain point of ridiculousness, or self-aware ridiculousness in my case, is like when they announced the new Kirby, I think it's called Lost World or something. The new one that looks like Kirby in Last of Us Land. And like that one, I was going crazy for that. And it's literally just Kirby be in a 3D environment, but it's not been done. Oh my God. Like, oh, it's going to be this big thing. And I think that there's a level of, obviously they used to trade on it with the Nintendo seal of quality, but there's a level of perfected game mechanics in there and you can lean on them history wise. You know, you can look at the Z targeting from Ocarina of Time or whatever you want to look at, the invention of the Metroid formula, something like that. Like I said, they're fundamentally responsible for everything in gaming, or at least the big broad strokes of it, minus loot systems, but most things. And I think that, you know, then when they do any one thing and it's like, oh, that's really cool, why has no one done that? That's a perfected version of a certain trope. And maybe if you grew up with those characters, they really land. It's a mix of all those things.
It reminds me kind of like how Studio Ghibli operates when doing their films. Like they always choose one facet to really focus on, like whether it's going to be food or animating water, or it's going to be something that you walk away from that experience just thinking, oh man, that one particular thing above all else was fantastic. Mm-hmm. They apply that logic to their games. They make one mechanic, or they do one, they approach a problem in a way that you've not thought of so well that it becomes such a integral part of the game and of the industry that it becomes impossible to ignore it.
They also, the way that they write their games, like they're not very, the thing is, if the thing that Stark Hunter's getting at is that they're just not for him, maybe you want something more mature than anything that Nintendo is ever going to do, and that's completely fine. The thing that, like I said, the way they write their games is they leave a lot of gaps. There's a lot of, like, it's very threadbare character writing, so you can imprint on yourself whatever aspects from that. I mean, people love Kirby. Kirby's my favorite Nintendo character. There's nothing to him. He's a circle with a face and a couple of feet, and that's about it.
Look at how their biggest mascots, they barely say anything. They it's basically like you say imprint onto them, so it's like Mario doesn't talk, Kirby doesn't really talk, doesn't like, it's like they have these mascots that you just go, they're so unoffensive that
it's, well, I think it's it's like Pixar style. It's just sort of like they've managed to walk that line. It's Disney, it's Pixar, it's that sort of immortal, almost childlike approach to something where it's like, oh, it's kind of wholesome, I love it, I love that it's in my life. And I think that like they have that spirit to them, they have that charm to them. Not to discount the fact that they've made some horrific business decisions. Literally, as we're recording this, I'm waiting for my £300 new Switch that just has a new screen on it. It's not even... What am I doing? I mean, I'm getting excited for a 3D platform and a new Nintendo console with a new Switch. Hey, a new screen.
Fair, but you should be fair, excited for Metroid Dread. It is a good game. It is a real good game.
That's the thing. I think it boils down to what they brought to the industry and what they continue to fall back on. They've never done a loot system and an EA-style money-grubby thing. They have specific tenets you can trust in them.
I would say that is incorrect.
You think so?
Do you not remember the Mario Kart mobile game where they had the pipes that shot prizes?
Yes.
That was pretty scummy.
I literally double think, completely discard the fact that they make mobile games. Like, yes, because there is. There's Fire Emblem, there's Mario. Yeah. I'm discarding that entirely. But, you know, you are right. And if you go down Pokemon Go's thing, obviously that was Niantic, but they were part of that. To some degree, that's very monetizable as well. But overall, it's an interesting conversation, obviously one that we could potentially do a whole podcast on, because there is that big love for Nintendo, but they're a big multifaceted thing.
So just to go back to Stark Hunter's thing, like, just because you don't gravitate towards them doesn't mean that you're wrong in any way.
No.
Like, you can like whatever video games that you like. It's just a case of, I think that the reason that Nintendo has endured for so long is because it's whimsy on a disc or in a cartridge, in their sense.
I think if you have access to it, go back, do the classics, go back, try Super Mario World. If the music and the presentation and the animation doesn't land with you, then it's just not for you, and that's fine. But like in a 2D sense, a lot of people just point to that game as like Nintendo incarnate. And that is like one of the biggest recommendations. He said he enjoyed Breath of the Wild, which I guess is a bigger, more expansive thing. Speaking of Nintendo, though, I kind of wanted to roll together because you asked for Switch game recommendations, an absolute ton. So I'm going to roll through quite a few of these. This is just a rundown, all the recommendations that people threw in that I think are absolutely everybody worth playing. Octopath Traveler, Smash Bros. Ultimate, Mario and Rabbids. Now, me and you argued about Mario and Rabbids back in the day. I'm so glad you're finally going to play it. Mario and Rabbids is hands down the best strategy game of how long? How long, Jules? 20 years? It might be.
I don't want to be upset when I play it and I'm just like, oh, XCOM. Like, my one true love is
the way that
by the stupid little sack of flour that's had the piss kicked out of it.
The thing with, that's the thing. I'm glad, I want a lot of people to experience Mario and Rabbids. The way that thing plays, the way you chain moves together is unlike any other turn-based strategy. I really, really love it. Splatoon 2, Astral Chain. Astral Chain might be the most overlooked action game in recent memory. It's brilliant. Platinum action game that was made only for the Switch. Zelda Link's Awakening, Pokemon Let's Go, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, Hyrule Warriors for the Dynasty Warriors fan in you.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze and The Last Campfire. The Last Campfire is the Hello Games follow-up to No Man's Sky, is just a nice little cutesy puzzle game, which I totally recommend as well.
That's a lot of games. That is a lot of games, actually. I wasn't expecting that many titles to be like immediate recommendations.
Get them all right now.
I've been speaking to Dows about this and yourself, and I know for a fact that Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild are the two that I need to get first.
Yes.
So I managed to secure myself a copy of Breath of the Wild for 30 bones, which is very good.
Very quickly throw this in, because we had a couple questions as well about Nintendo's pricing saying, you know, the way that Nintendo operate, will digital prices ever come down, and why are Nintendo's prices so high? So what's your experience with this? Because we've been DMing about the reality of you experiencing Nintendo pricing.
So this is the thing, like you go onto the e-store and I was just like, okay, cool, have a little browse. And there's a massive sale on Blockbuster sale. I was like, oh, this is the perfect time.
Their sale is the worst use of that word.
So I looked at it and I was like, Mario Odyssey down from like £64 down to £50. I was like, looking at it, I was like, that's not a sale. That's literally the full price. You're overcharging me to cut a bit off to say that it's, what? And then it was like Breath of the Wild wasn't even on there. And I was okay, fair enough. No sale for Breath of the Wild then.
It reminds me.
I was just like, I was not impressed with the prices, but
no,
I've been told that this is just Nintendo par for the course. Like, kinda. They do not discount their first party titles because where else are you going to get them from? Like,
well,
they
can
charge you whatever you want because you are locked in.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, and they also, actually, I'm going to throw in Luigi's Mansion to that list as well. Ooh. But that's a really good like follow up to the old school ones. But yeah, that's the thing. Like we talk about that like Nintendo reputation or whatever they represent. They know that. And they're like, oh, you're going to pay £60 a premium price point to play Breath of the Wild or play whatever. And sometimes that there's a bad side to that where maybe the game isn't long enough or something. But I think they're expecting you to pay for a certain level of perfected quality. It's not like Nintendo games bug and glitch out very much, now, if at all, really.
As a disclaimer, I feel like just to jump back onto Metroid Dread, Metroid Dread is retailing at a full price at the moment. It is considered to be worth £60, which I have to say, I blasted through that game in 7 hours. That's where I completed it for the first one. The thing is that do you think that 7 hours of some of the best gameplay that I've experienced in a long, long, long time is worth that price? For me, I actually would say no. I would say a £40 price tag is where it's at. But I didn't realize that they were that price when I did the review for the channel. I was like looking at it, just going like, wait, this is how much they're charging.
Well, you never really know.
A slightly discounted one because I saw pre-order prices that were varying wildly in flux. I was like, okay, right, what's going on here then?
Well, I mean, for me, I'm buying the special edition. So it's like, I think it's £80 or £90, but it comes with like an art book and stuff. But
£90.
It's a fair whack. It's like, it's some steelbook thing with an art. I mean, I'm a massive Metroid fan. It's the first one in 17 years or something. So, or maybe even longer than that. But so I was like, I'll get everything. But yeah, it is down to each individual person's disposable income. But Nintendo pricing, they are known for it. And it's not to excuse it, but that just is the reality of the way they do business. If you want a Nintendo first party title, it's going to be astronomical. It's going to be high priced.
The only thing that I thought was very strange is that pricing model seems to have been adopted by other publishers on the platform. And I was like, wait, hold on a minute. Why is this version of like Doom Eternal retailing at a higher price than the PC version when, let's face it, because of the specifications of the hardware, it is the inferior version?
Well, there is a term, I can't think of the exact percentage right now, but there's a term called Nintendo tax. Nintendo charge more for people selling stuff on the Nintendo store versus the PlayStation store and the Xbox store. So some publishers, if they're not willing to eat that cost necessarily, will just hike up the price to make the difference up.
There you go, that's shady.
Well, it's just business. It's just sort of, it's just Nintendo. It sucks.
But no, that's not business. That's like what they've done is that they're operating within an oligopoly market. They've got a lot of big players in there, yet they are cornering their own market by turning their own storefront into a monopoly and that you have to pay them.
It's one of those things where it's just like, does the average person know about that? No. Like, are they just assuming that people will pay for this thing? Like, yes. Like, it's just like they trade so... Yes, and it's just like, and again, it's not to excuse it. It does suck, but these are sadly just the business realities of the way they do business because they have, like you said, a lockdown first party storefront and their trade-in market is so low and et cetera, et cetera. So it's Nintendo are a fascinating beast because of all these things.
I feel like we should do like a deep dive on like everything. Not like to criticize them in like everything they've done wrong, but a brutal truth on it, like an honest look at Nintendo would be quite a good.
I might put out, because we occasionally do community posts and stuff, I might just put out as a general question, do we think that Nintendo are like overrated or something like that? Because I don't think so. But it's one of those questions. There's obviously going to be all the console wars people going like, yes, of course. They couldn't even do a Last of Us.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Next thing down is Far Cry 6, and people are just asking whether it's worth the money, whether or not it is just literally another cash in, because
now
it's
I've
Far Cry.
I've not played this, so I'll ask you the question, is it worth the money, mate?
Oh God, it's more Far Cry. If you like some Far Cry, I think it's the best one since 3. I wouldn't pay £60 for it, because it is just more Far Cry. I think if you want to scratch that itch, I would just get one of the older ones. To be honest, I would get the remaster of 3. It depends how many different Far Cries you've played. I think if you're burned out on the formula, it's not going to bring you back. One of the reasons I'm loving it so much is that I didn't click that much with 5. I thought it was fine, but it went on.
Ducked out at 5.
Right. Yeah. It just went on way too long. And I played all of them too. Like, I played all the Far Cries. And so it was one of those things where I played it for a whole bunch of hours. I finished it. I was just like, oh my God, I am done with this. And it's just, for whatever reason, time distortion across the pandemic, whatever, I'm really liking Far Cry 6, but it is the big, stupid, crazy version of that game. But it's 4K 60. It runs really nicely. Mm-hmm. It's a perfected version of that formula. You get way more abilities at the start than you do in any of the other ones, so it kind of just hits the ground running, and then you can just dive into it.
My worry is, though, that if that is the best that Far Cry can be, if it is the polishing of that formula, then where do you go from here? Because we already had, like, for me personally, I want to see them return to the more crazier side of things, like when they put out Blood Dragon. Like, I want something like that. Like, go full on ridiculous.
They did do, they kind of did that for Far Cry 5's DLC. They, like, let you go to Mars, and there was like an aliens thing. And
like,
it was all
like,
crazy. There was like Primal, then there was New Dawn and stuff. So I feel like they've rinsed the living hell out of the formula overall.
Primal was bad, though.
Primal, I didn't mind Primal, to be honest, but it was like they took out a lot of the technology, obviously, because it was so long ago. But I liked the little owl companion and stuff. But yeah, ultimately, it's more Far Cry. I think it's very streamlined Far Cry. If you love the formula and you're not burnt out on it, you'll enjoy it. But I would also say that you shouldn't pay £60 for it. I think you should wait until there's at least £10-15 knocked off it, or dollars. Next question from Carol Tabsia. See, the thing is, I tried Googling this dude's name because I want to say his name properly. I tried Googling his name. So apologies. Please message me. Let me know how to say your name properly. I think it's Carol Tabsia, but I'm probably completely wrong. But he says, hello, legends. What do you think will be the next big innovation in gaming? Also, what do you guys think about James Bond and No Time to Die? Now, I've not seen No Time to Die, but I'm not a Bondsman. I'm not a Bond fan.
I am not a Bondsman. I'm a Kingsman now. If we're going to do sort of more sort of silly spy stuff, it's got to be Kingsman, because that's just a bit of a laugh. Just to give my 2 cents in on the Bond franchise, I think that it was fantastic when Daniel Craig started. Casino Royale is easily one of my favorite Bond films ever made. Mm-hmm. But I haven't actually liked any film that he's put out afterwards. I feel like the hype builds it up to be way more than it can be.
Right.
And when it's delivered, it's just like, hey, look, it's another villain with facial scarring. He's slightly European.
He's got a plan.
Yeah, he's got a plan. And usually that plan isn't actually that good. Like, it's just, it could fall apart in so many ways.
I think I would actually almost 100% back you. I think that I love Casino Royale, and then Quantum was terrible. Skyfall was fine. Like, I know that that's blasphemy. People love Skyfall, but...
The thing is that, like, Skyfall was one of those things where I watched it and I was like, okay, it's just Home Alone.
By the end of it, it is, yeah.
And I hated the fact that anyone with, and I'm not saying that if you like Skyfall that you're stupid, but I am saying that if you take a step back and look at the conveniences of the main villain's plot to escape the London Underground.
Right,
how
yeah.
many things just happen to happen at the right time. It's just like that sort of stuff.
It takes
I
you out.
Really
it.
Dislike because mm. it's like you're not actually planning. You're not showing your villainous streak. What you're doing is just being incredibly lucky.
There's a lot of like luck in that series. Like, I mean, the bit in Skyfall everyone loves with on the train where it all goes like sideways and crashes, and then he manages to get out of it and he does his cuffs up like he's just managed to get out of it. But I don't know. I've never been a massive Daniel Craig as Bond fan. Like, I don't mind him in, I like him in Casino Royale, it's fine, but overall his level of like smarm, I don't find yeah. it endearing. I just find it mate. boring.
So to be fair, on the smarm scale he's actually one of the lower ones. I mean, Roger Moore is like he's slick with smarm. He's drinking it from every pore.
The thing is, my Bond is Pierce Brosnan. I've only seen the Pierce Brosnan ones. I've never seen the classics.
Your Bond is Pierce Brosnan.
But I don't have a reference point. My reference point
is GoldenEye.
Because of GoldenEye, yeah, literally. Yeah. I saw GoldenEye in the cinema when I was like 8 or whatever I was, and I thought that was like the best thing ever. And then that's almost it. Die Another Day.
And then you went home and
ridiculous.
Played GoldenEye, and it's
exactly
in
it
your
cemented
mind
itself
it.
In. Yeah, and that was it. And so I've never gone back to the classics. I know that Sean Connery's the one, and people talk about Timothy Dalton being like, you know, reappreciated these
good,
days.
Yeah.
So there's all that. I know that Bond fans might have already unsubscribed from this podcast by now because we've said so many blasphemous things. James Blasphemous. But I don't know. I'm going to go see No Time to Die. But yeah. my plan is to rewatch all of the Craig ones and then go to the last one. And then that's like 15
that's
years worth of
slog.
Storytelling. But I was like, well, I might as well do it properly before I finish it out. But yeah, overall, don't know.
I'm glad that they're moving away from him. I want a sort of like a fresh take on it. And I think that the series needs to sort of step away from itself and start reevaluating what it wants to be as a franchise going forward. Like everyone said the moment that Daniel Craig took over, that the times are changing. Like it's not the same.
Craig himself hates being Bond.
Yeah, because of the fact that he's stuck within a paradigm of just being like, this is what a masculinity is versus this is what society is at the moment in the real world. So he's always in conflict with that.
Yeah, I would genuinely love if they did. I guess maybe like, you know, keep Bond male if you need to for the sake of the story I'm about to sketch out, but do a really good progressive dissection of masculinity in the modern day. And that doesn't mean like, you know, you just take that, whatever that means to a certain team of creatives. I would love to see that, a genuine risk with what it means to be Bond in the modern day and try and, because that character has so much of a history with toxic masculinity. And Bond, Daniel Craig himself said like he's a horrible individual. I think that's the thing that puts a lot of people off him. So it's like trying to thread that needle. Could you still make something that felt like Bond but also felt more respectable or whatever in the modern day? That might be quite interesting. In terms of what do you think will be the next innovation in gaming? I don't know, because it was meant to be VR, but
I think
it ain't gonna be that.
Nah, I feel like they've already gotten like sick of that toy, haven't they? I think that there's more sensory stuff will be developed for the market. Like you can see those full body rigs that people have got for those like action games now. There's sensors that you can put onto your body that will like stimulate sort of like different things when you get shot and stuff like that. There's like synaptic feedback or whatever it's called. I feel like that moving forward will develop from VR and maybe...
if we all just get suits.
Yeah, I imagine it will create this sort of like huge space sort of thing. But the problem is that VR tech hasn't got cheaper. Everyone was saying that they would jump on, and there is brilliant quality, the stuff that's out there. But it's just like no big titles are being made for it anymore, and no one's putting the money into making this technology cheaper and more available for everyone.
I'm curious like what you do, because the thing with VR that I think no one really capitalized on, or at least in the console space, was like, I always liken it to when analog sticks came around. As soon as we got two analog sticks, that fundamentally changed how games control. Like you can move and you can do the camera, and that changes, like it just changes everything. And so like in VR, one of the things that stood out to me was that you can sort of like aim in two places at once, like one arm shooting that way, one arm shooting the other way, and you can look around at the same time. I was like, well, that's a fundamental advancement of like being in a 3D space, but hardly any games took advantage of that, or hardly any games make you go, oh my god, I need to do that in VR because I need to try this thing. And so like that was the thing with analog sticks. It was like, oh my god, I need to try that because that's a cool way to move a game. Ape Escape, so one of the best games of all time, but the first time I played it was like, still, oh my god, this plays like nothing else. And so I think VR needs that. Maybe that's what the actual innovation would be in VR. Some sort of game, kind of like a Half-Life, Alex, that just makes you go, I need to try this. That's what they're waiting on.
It was one of those things where I was writing about Ape Escape today and I knew that I was somewhere pissing you off because of the fact that I was writing about how Ape Escape on the Loose for the PSP and then Vita was a terrible, terrible remake.
Why'd you say that to a public audience of people?
Okay, here we go. We'll talk about it, the entry itself, just quickly. Ape Escape, literally championed for the fact that you've got two thumbsticks. It made its entire gameplay around the use of
those controllers. Right, yeah.
It was only mandated that you could only play it using the DualShock controller.
Yes.
Now, what's the one big problem that a PSP has?
It's the little
nubbin. Bloody thumbstick.
The thing is, you're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong. I think actually thinking back on playing that on PSP, the control scheme is horrendous.
So bad.
I just love the first Ape Escape so much, but it's not enough to mask the reality of what they did. But yeah, I would hope for something in the VR space, but I genuinely don't know. I've been appreciating the amount of games that are just 4K 60 as standard, or at least 60 frames a second as standard. I feel like that does make a meaningful difference. And I know that all the PC people have been screaming that for years. Mm-hmm. But when the average benchmark becomes 60 frames a second, everything just feels better as a game. That's not a revolution, but I like that as a general advancement thing. Mm-hmm. Next question from Matthew McGowan, who says, we often talk about the best 6 out of 10 games, but what are the best 8 out of 10 games?
Oh, man.
Something that's good in every way without being great. Some of their votes would be The Darkness, Dark Sector, Blood Wake, Killswitch, and Condemned Criminal Origins. That's a lovely
I haven't thought about that game in so long, man.
Dark Sector's got Lex Luthor in it. The guy that played Lex in Smallville is the main lad in Dark Sector. I love Dark Sector, but I thought it fell off a cliff towards the second half. Because I love when you had the glaive. That's a game where you throw a glaive in slow motion. Yeah. It's like a big spinny thing. And you can cut dudes' legs off and stuff with it in slow motion. It was great. Very Attitude Era.
The film Krull. Do you ever
I haven't seen Krull. What's Krull?
Krull's good, man. It's so
have they got
campy.
A glaive in it? Is there a big spinny glaive in it?
That literally, is it he like it, that's what this mystical glaive is. It's got three prongs and a jewel in the middle. And he like, throws it and he can control it. And it's like
nowhere near enough stuff in games where you can throw it and then track the thing you've thrown. Like you know, it was in Heavenly
like
Sword,
Batarang
and Arkham. Yeah, totally. And then like there's like hardly any games like Assassin's Creed. I guess brought it back where you can follow the arrow a bit. But let me throw a glaive at some dude's legs and let me cut them off, mate. That's all. I want to do. So I would totally back Dark Sector. The Darkness is brilliant as well, the first one. I actually just rebought that. I'll throw in Aliens versus Predator from Rebellion. Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's more of a 7 out of 10. I don't know. We're very specific. But I really like that. I really like that game.
I would put in Maximo. Do you remember playing that?
Oh, God. Yeah. Might be Magic, 3D. I think.
No, it's the 3D Super Ghouls or Super Ghosts and Goblins game. And you play as a lovely little character called Maximo and you run around a little 3D space and they had a sequel called like Golden Army or something like that as well.
Okay.
That might be Hellboy.
Is that the one where you get your armor knocked off and you go down to your little heart,
your little
skivvies, heart boxes?
Yeah, it's such a nice little reference that. It is an amazing platforming game. Mm. Absolutely love that. So that's my
I'd throw in Kena Bridge of Spirits, the new one, because I blitzed that in one sitting and I've just never gone back to it. There's no new game plus. There's nothing else to it other than the first time through, but it's a perfect 4-star game.
Mate, I've just thought of one. 8 out of 10 game.
Yes.
Tell me I'm wrong. Destruction Derby Raw for the PlayStation 1 was amazing.
I think Destruction Derby 1 and 2. Was there another one?
Yeah, that's the thing. Everyone played the first two and it was this concept's done. But Destruction Derby Raw was amazing because what it did was it like upped the craziness and just silliness of it all.
Okay.
And then what it did was it gave you the options to like, instead of just being like an old stock car, gave you like a van you could be in or like a semi-truck. And just like smashing into people.
I think you've played Wreckfest, but like Wreckfest is like the new age Destruction Derby. Like, I just give me more physics based car games. Like, they're so few and far between. Last couple questions from first up, Russell Kelly. Hope that we're both doing okay and staying healthy. Thank you. Have you guys watched Squid Game? Also, thoughts on the Battlefield 2042 beta? That's out today, so I guess we'll potentially check that out across the weekend. But what's your thoughts on Squid Game?
The thing is that I haven't watched all of the series, so please don't ruin it for me.
They're all aliens.
I thought that it was really, really. I love the concept. I love the idea. The visuals are striking. There's a lot of work.
I love the way it's shot. Yeah,
It just is a beautiful looking thing, and it is horrendous in places as well. Like, it is so tense, and I really love it as a concept. It's like murderous Takeshi's Castle. Like, what's not to like about that?
It's, I don't know if you saw Alice in Borderlands, which is another sort of like battle royale, competition based game. It's set in Japan. That one is, but it reminded me a lot of that. I'm sure it's called Alice in Borderlands. But Squid Game, immaculately shot, immaculately edited. I loved it until the VIPs episode, and then it just ate itself, and it completely lost me.
It's
the episode where you find everything out, and it was the thing where I was like, oh, I wanted more from that, or like, oh, that's not being done very well.
Done series.
They're apparently planning a season two now, but I think for right now it's still a season. It's only one season, okay. But I guess we'll see. But yeah, it's still. I mean, I still think it ends really good. It ends really strong, and overall, it's super recommendable. I just personally was quite tired of the reveal of the sort of the thing that they lean on. I was just like, oh, we've done this. We've done this a lot, and I thought you had something new. But the overall messaging in the show is so worthwhile. The overall dissection of worth and purpose and what money means to people and stuff like that. I do love all that stuff. So yeah, it's a hell of a thing though. Like the Rotten Tomatoes being 100%. I know it's got less than that now, but it was like the highest rated show for like the first week or something.
I never trust the Rotten Tomatoes because the amount of times that I've viewed 100% films according to like the crazy stuff, and I've just been like, okay, this is bad. This is so wanky.
Last question from Nod Dog, who says, hello lads, what game have you put an ungodly amount of hours into for no reason? Mine would be Jack 3.
Oh,
Jack 3 is a very good game here. That's a very good reason.
I'd say that Jack 3 is for me better than Jack 2. I know
that's madness. I can't sanction your buffoonery in
Jack
the words of Tommy
X
Lee Jones.
Jack Combat Racing is better than Jack 2.
Why would you say that on the day of my Metroid's wedding? Why have you gone there? Jack X though, it's all right. It's still Crash Team Racing, mate. Crash Team Racing's better than Jack 2. If you want to just throw a weekly show where we just say which things are better than Jack 2. Crash Team Racing is better than Jack 2.
What is better than Jack 2 this week?
And I love Jack 2, to be honest. That's one of my favourite games.
I'm trying to think of what I spent an ungodly amount. I mean, Daisy is just one to go back to that. I just think, why did I do it? It was just like at a time in my life where I was just playing to chat with like some of the friends that I've made online, and they just always wanted to play that. Mm-hmm. And I just remember just like, okay, so what's the plan this time? Okay, right, we're going to run for 45 minutes to get to this area that may or may not have been looted. We might get shot by somebody straight away. Then you're going to be like respawning over here. I'll be over here. We'll have to meet up again and then do that. I was like, why are we finding this fun again?
I hate any game where you run more than you shoot. If it's a shooter and you're literally, you run for ages to get to the place and you'd have one tiny exchange with someone and you respawn 20 minutes away. I hate that so much.
The only times that I had fun in that game were when it was just like me and my mates just like panning around chatting, like just passing the time, or the very few instances where we met another player and didn't immediately break out into a firefight. Like it was like, let's talk to them. Let's do something silly to them. Let's make them sit down by a campfire. Or like,
because like there's a new game called Hell Let Loose. I don't know who it's developed by, but that is it's like Operation Flashpoint, if you ever played that back in the day.
That was like a realistic war simulator.
Yeah. It's like that applied to World War II, and like, and it's really, really well done, but you are running for 10-15 minutes to get to somewhere for one bullet across the battlefield to take you out to reset and do it all over again. But Hell Let Loose is obviously, it's very like, people are checking it out at the minute. It's the PlayStation Plus game this month. I'm trying to think of like, because I feel like there'll be something that I've just
thought of one. You mentioned it earlier in the episode with Dynasty Warriors. Dynasty Warriors, like, across the whole, has eaten so much of my life. But one specifically, Dynasty Warriors 7, I managed to go through and get every single weapon with every single character, which, for the record, is an insane amount of grind. Mm-hmm. Like, it's... we're talking hundreds of hours in order to get it. And what was the point of it? Nothing other than to say that I did it. It's almost the same as like my friend Liam, who also did this challenge with me. He went off after that, and his next game that he played to death was Final Fantasy X, where he completed the entirety of the sphere grid. I'm not talking about just all of the skills learned. He filled in every single mode. Thing. Mad.
I love the Final Fantasy X sphere grid. If there's little tiny debates that split people, I love the Final Fantasy X sphere grid. Yeah, I don't. Mine would be some. I mean, the most hours I put into a game is 620 hours into The Witcher 3, which,
whoa,
like, I mean, I haven't even done everything in that game. I just love that world so much that I was in it for most of 2015.
That's
so it's like, that's a lot of hours. But then they revealed like a couple of years later that the runtime counter was actually glitched. So it might not be that, but it definitely felt like that. I definitely spent most of that year in that game. But yeah, overall though, thanks to everybody for sending in all their various questions and talking points and things. And we'll put another question tweet out next week. It'll be on Thursday afternoon, either from myself or Jules. You can find me on Twitter @LP89. Jules, what are you?
@RetroJ with a zero.
Beautiful. Thanks everybody again for sending all their questions and thoughts.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So we'll catch you all next week.